Greetings, Mr. Bow.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Rise and shine. Your eyes look like it's 8 a.m.
Oh, I wonder why that might be. Yes, I've been... Hold on. Let the live stream start.
Your cough is wonderful as usual.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to push this button here. Where is this? Not yet. Yeah, I've been awake for maybe 10, 15 minutes. And after probably only being asleep like 4 hours, maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you're not doing too bad. Okay. Oh, and I have to, because Juana's working early voting, I have a hard stop at in 1 hour and 30 minutes from now, exactly.
Okay.
Because I have to take Manu to music.
Okay, so let's get this thing going. Here it comes. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. I'm messing up already, like seconds in. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. Yeah, exactly. For Saturday, October 26th, 2024. It is just after 15 UTC as we're starting to record, which is early for me. I'm not, but I'm here.
Quite early for Sam.
Yeah.
I did request that we do it at this hour. Thanks to exigent circumstances.
But, you know, you could have asked for 1 or 2 hours earlier than this. And I would have done it.
Awake.
I would have.
You still would have awake?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I wasn't awake for this. I'm not awake right now. I'm asleep. At this very moment. And yes. Anyway, we're going to do our normal. We'll do a butt first with random crap. And then...
What did you tell our audience last week? Unfortunately, folks, last week at the last minute,
let me finish. We'll do the other stuff, and then we'll do newsy stuff. Which, I mean, given the date, given it is the end of October in an election year, you know what we're going to be talking about. But
college football,
exactly.
Yes.
Anyway, all I told people, Yvonne, was that. You at the last minute were not feeling well and could not make it. That's all.
Well, that's an understatement. At the last minute, okay, when I woke up, I'd agreed with Sam to record this on Saturday, and actually it had been because I had not been feeling well all week. I'd gone on a business trip and I felt sick, and I basically worked on Friday when I got back, but I was in bed. I was not well. And Saturday morning, I woke up and it felt, instead of better, which I hope, hey, I'm getting some rest and drinking fluids, fine. It felt way worse. And at that moment, I said, well, I'm going to the emergency room. This cannot be right. And, you know, at first I thought, just give me some medicines and send me back home. Well, they did a CAT scan and they said, no, you're staying here. Because I got a bout of diverticulitis, which is an issue with the lower intestine in which it gets infected. You know, one thing is interesting that I kept reading about it, and nobody really understands why. It's more prevalent in Asian and European men, and the location is not exactly the same for Asian and European men. And it's very painful. And yeah. If you don't really treat it, and I, you know, according to the doctor, I did notice it. I didn't wait. I went quickly noticed that it was like at a very early stage because it, in many cases, it can require surgery.
Okay.
So it's not good. In order to treat it, they have to remove part of the, it require removing part of your lower intestine.
You don't want that if you can
afford. No, yeah. I actually, you know, my last couple of months, I've had some gastro issues. If you guys remember a podcast I did in late August, I was deathly sick recovering from specifically some about of this. And I have to think that that played part into this at this point. I don't see how it didn't. I don't think it could be a coincidence. I haven't had a gastrointestinal virus like that in years, and then all of a sudden I get one that's like that bad, and then I wind up with infection. But the good news is that I'm on the mend. Mm-hmm. I am not going to say that I am 100% because I am not. I can feel that I'm still a little bit lethargic. I think that's the right word overall. Okay. So, and I have to take, I'm still in the middle of taking treatment because they gave me IV antibiotics, but now I have to go through a round of like 10 days of antibiotics. And then, and I have to go back to my GI for a checkup. And the thing is that I had a colonoscopy like this year. They didn't really see anything to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the doctor said that, well, hey, sometimes this thing happens just like that. It could just happen in a snap. So, but the good news is that I didn't have to get surgery. The ER here, thank God, I went to, was very quick. They didn't really make me wait. Good. I was like there. I got put into an attending room real quick. In a couple of hours, they already had me in the, inside. They did the CAT scan, they did the IVs, blah, 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 and they had put me in a room. And the main reason to put me in a room was they just wanted to make sure that I was recovering.
Mm-hmm.
That the medicine was taking effect. And I will say that the IV antibiotics had took, in less than 6 hours, the pain had subsided, like, I would say 80%+. So that was good.
So how long were you there for, total?
Well, thankfully, I only had to spend, I got there Saturday morning, pretty early, and they let me go Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
They wanted to see that I could have a meal. Because they saw that the antibiotics were having the effect that they desired. And they did a check and they said, in the morning, and they said, okay, look, let's get you real food now. Because I had not eaten, my God, that week. I barely ate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to eat. What they said is, look, we're going to give you another round of IVs. And then we're going to give you a prescription for pills and then on your way home. So I am here now. So yes, well, I'm not, usually at this hour on Saturdays, I go exercise, but right now I'm like I said, I can't do that right now. So I gotta get some rest and get a follow up. And hopefully then next week I'll try some lighter activity, but not like a full
right
workout. But I'm here. I'm alive.
Glad you're feeling better. Glad whatever they're doing to you is working.
Yeah.
Glad you didn't need surgery.
Oh God. Yeah. But anyway, I think that's good enough for a butt first. Sam, you got a movie?
No, I still haven't gone through and done the thing, but I do have an update for you. An important update.
I like important updates.
It is related.
Just don't do them like my wife. My wife freaks me out by calling me and says,
"We need to talk.
We need to talk." And I'm like, "Oh my God, what?" I think the ice cubes are, they're kind of stuck. I'm like, "That's what you need to talk about? Sound like,
yeah,
somebody's dying."
No. This is an update, but it is media related update. It is on this.
On this.
So I normally only talk about a TV show if I've finished it, the whole damn thing. But I did want to update you, since I know you have a specific interest in Law and Order,
okay,
that Alex and I have finished season one. It took
us, my God.
Looking at my notes here, we started season one in, let me make sure I have this right, on July 9th, 2023. and we finished in the last couple of weeks. I would have mentioned this last week. So that took,
well,
I have done the math. It took us 15 months to finish season one of Law and Order. At that rate, if they made no additional new episodes, which of course they are making new episodes, but if they made no,
the problem is that now, you know, they started making new episodes, so all of a sudden this has become, you know, you're like on a moving sidewalk all of a sudden,
right? But like,
and you're going slower than the sidewalk.
But if they made no new episodes, it would take us an additional 26 years to catch up to where they are now.
Look, at this point, I see you in like some convalescent home and Alex coming to visit you, and you guys are on season, you know, like, I don't know, 18 still. Dad, we still got, come on. We still got to catch up. Come on. Let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah. So that's my update. Like, you know, cause I don't think, like, you know, my rule of like, we'll talk about the show once I've finished it. It'll be a while. It'll be a while yet for long.
It'll be a while. It'll be quite a while. Yes. It's gonna, you know,
I will say we have enjoyed season one.
Yeah.
We're
it's
now
a good show.
We're now actually a couple episodes into season two, but yeah. You know, so
I don't know, out of some boredom the other day, I started, I'm going through, so I actually have, I'm pretty sure I double checked, but it's correct. On my YouTube TV DVR, I am pretty confident I have every episode recorded right now. Okay. All of them on the cloud DVR, because I have not had seen one missing right now. I have all the seasons. So I started going back and I did rewatch I've watched season one. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that has, I think, George D'Zunza is a cop.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've been like going through it, double checking, like, hey, which episodes haven't I watched? Just double checking. Okay. You know, so I've been like going through
just making sure.
Or which ones don't I remember what happened?
Did you get the pilot?
Yes, I have watched the pilot.
Okay. Because sometimes, like, it was originally aired in the first season, but out of order. Like, they, you know, it was the, and so we watched it properly, watching the pilot first. But, you know, when it was originally aired, the pilot was, I don't know, episode 4 or 5 or something. It was just like stuck in the middle, and it would have seemed out of place because it's a slightly different style than they actually settled on for the show proper. So, anyway.
So I'm going back through it, and, I think I'm on season 6 right now.
Okay.
Something around there. So.
Yeah, so.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know. I was like, I've been like a little bit bored. Let me take that back. I've been super busy with work things or whatever one now. But when I went to sit down to watch any television content, one of the things, there are a couple of shows that I do like and some that have new episodes, but it's not like, okay, I watched third. Okay. They had the new Shrinking on Apple TV Plus, which is a great show.
Think you mentioned it before a while back.
And so they had the new season now. And so, okay, great. But that's okay. Half hour. Okay. I'm done. Now what? Okay. So, all right, well, let's just go back and fucking watch, you know, old Law and Order episodes, because I went through all the Air Disasters shows
right
this year. I went back and I watched through every, so I did that. So now
are you at the point where you're like, God damn it, they need to crash some more fucking planes so they can make more episodes?
Well, there's actually a whole bunch of, you see, the thing is that Air Disasters doesn't, in many cases, involves planes that, you know, maybe had bad incidents, not necessarily crashes. Mm. So there's a whole bunch of those. But for some reason, they've been very slow in production recently. I don't know if the pandemic impacted that, because I know a lot of shows were impacted by that. Last season of Law and Order, for example, wound up being very short because of the strike.
Yep.
Okay. So there's been the pandemic, strike, all these things that have slowed down TV production. So I don't know if that's what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. So maybe. Who knows? But you know, other than that,
So
I don't have anything. But you're season one.
Season one is complete, and we've started season two. So as you mentioned, spoilers, people. The one detective from season one was killed in the first episode of season two. They killed him off.
Yeah.
And so they switched. So I'm still not used to the new guy they replaced him with, but you know, whatever. And I haven't looked it up. Do you know, like, did the actor just not want to come back, or did they fire him?
He didn't
want to
come back.
He
didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
He didn't want to come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
He was like, this is not what I really signed up for, blah, blah, blah. I didn't want to come back. So that's the way, hey, you know, what do we do with an actor? Well, we'll just fucking kill him.
Right. Okay.
There was a movie. I always loved this movie.
Was this nevertheless like the peak of his career? And then he never did anything useful again?
Basically, as far as I can tell.
So yeah, good choice
like
on his
part. That was one of the worst career decisions I've seen, like, for somebody. I'll tell you this. You know, there was a movie called Soap Dish that is hilarious. And I I don't know. I will say that probably some of the humor right now could not. In retrospect, right now, there are some choices of humor there that are not, that are poor choices. But one funny thing is that at one point they decide to try to bring back a character. Okay, and the character had been, you know, had been written off 30 years ago, and one of the writers goes back. And because it's a soap, okay? And so the writer goes to go, this is a writer that had not been at the show 30 years before. It's one of these, because these long-running soap operas, they run for so long that the people, like, you know, like some of them that are still on the air now, I mean, they're not the same writers or people or shit that what actors, none of the people are the same as they were 30 years before. But they want to bring this back, the guy back that was written off 20, you know, whatever, a long time ago. So the writer goes back to see how the hell did the guy get written off? And the guy apparently was in a car accident where he got decapitated. And so the thing is that he's going to but the producer is adamant about bringing this guy back to the show. And I'm like, how the hell do we bring this guy back? The guy was literally in the show. We said he was decapitated. He doesn't have a head. How do I write for a guy that doesn't have a head? And he said, no, we'll say that he went to some clinic in Europe and they reattached his head and, you know, everything is fine. And the woman, and by the way, the writer was Whoopi Goldberg, why you made it earlier. It's like looking at him like, what the fuck am I doing with this? Okay, fine, whatever. We'll write him back in. He's back from Europe.
There you go.
Apparently, in Europe, they can reattach your heads.
He was misdiagnosed.
Yes, it was a misdiagnosis. So, yeah, you know, so this is, anyway.
Okay, all right, well. So Yvonne has a hard stop today, so we're going to go ahead and cut this short, even though I'm sure we could find more TV to talk about. And we will be back to talk about the election for however long it takes. I'll probably start with poll updates, and then we'll move on to everything else. Okay, here we go. This is a break. This is a Wiki of the Day break. This is for random Wiki of the Day. And I actually, like, I had selected this to be on the agenda, like, last week, and it would have been, no one cares. Like, the point is, it is the current random Wiki of the Day as we are recording this, not one I picked earlier, but whatever. Anyway, here we go.
Do. Hello, this is Neural Kajal. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties, popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Random Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for Beta Sebap Rebellion. The Beta Sebap Rebellion, Turkish, Beta Sebap Isyan, Kurdish, Sir Hildana Elka, was the first Kurdish rebellion in the modern Republic of Turkey. The revolt was led by Halid Bek Sibran of the Sibran tribe. Other prominent commanders were Ihsan Nuri and Yusuf Ziya Bey. Its causes laid in opposition to the abolition of the Ottoman Caliphate by Ataturk on the 3rd of March 1924, the repressive Turkish policies towards Kurdish identity, the prohibition of public use and teaching of the Kurdish languages, and the resettling of Kurdish landowners and tribal chiefs in the west of the country. Numerous officers of the Turkish army deserted for the rebellion. The rebellion began in August 1924, when the garrison of Beytasabat revolted against the Turkish government. The rebellion proved unsuccessful and ended shortly after it began. Yusufziya Bey was arrested on the 10th of October 1924 and reportedly accused Halid Bek Sibran of having been also involved in the revolt. Halid Bek Sibran was captured in Erzurum in December 1924. Both were court-martialed in Bitlis. Although the rebellion was suppressed, another Kurdish uprising, the Sheikh Zayed rebellion, would begin the next year. That's it. See? Fun, entertaining, and educational, right? Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do.
Okay, we're back. So now, first of all, I hope everybody out there listening can now fully understand whatever the hell it was they were talking about, because I admit I like tuned out like after a few seconds and was preparing for next episode.
I was not paying attention. Well, you know, was this picked because of our recent discussion about bringing back the Ottoman Empire?
No. This was random wiki of the day.
I imagine. So that was, it's very interesting because our discussion that we had a few weeks ago, we were talking about
the Ottoman.
Well, maybe we should bring back the Ottoman Empire, okay, in order to solve the Middle East problems, of course, which we were being facetious. I really don't think that would really be a solution, but, you know, it's one of those things. But, yeah, you know, no. So,
and this was the Kurds and Turkey and stuff like that. But it was post-Ottoman, though. But it wasn't
that. No, it was post-Ottoman. Yeah, no, I know, because it was the Kurdish rebellion in Turkey. Yeah, no, I get that. But I talked a little bit how that part of this originated with, you know, with the fall of the Ottoman Empire and stuff. Anyway.
So let me start out this sucker. So first of all, I'll say on just over 24 hours ago, I posted the latest of my blog post updates on Election Graphs. So if you go to electiongraphs.com and hit the blog section, you will see 12 days out, what about junk polls? And so let me summarize what was there. The situation has not changed in any substantial way since I made this post. As I speak, there's probably about 6 to 8 new polls I haven't done the data entry for yet that happened like since I did it yesterday before now. And yeah, I'll get them in after the show, but I scanned through the states that they are part of and nothing substantially. They're all states that don't matter, you know, which, you know, tangent, like the fact that they're states that don't matter in our presidential elections is actually a problem, but whatever. But anyway, the basic thing I did was the fundamental situation of the polls hasn't just not changed since I made this post like a day and a half ago, but really has been the same for a long time. Basically, for the last month or so, it's been best characterized as too close to call with a very slight Trump advantage. For the month and a half before that, it was too close to call with a very slight Harris advantage. But either way, it's too close to call. You're just maybe the slight advantage to one or the other based on current polling. But it fundamentally has not changed very much in like 3 months. Basically, Harris jumped into the race and instantly the dynamics changed from when Biden was in. And then things settled down.
I think that it swung from Trump with a slight lead to, depending on the averages and the estimates, you know, you have Trump with a slight lead. Others have Harris with a slight lead. But the reality is that it was, I think, almost everybody had consistently Trump with a slight lead before Harris jumped.
Well, with Biden, it was a little bit more than a slight lead. It was not a huge lead, but it was more than slight.
It was probably like a, you know.
I mean, basically Harris moving in Harris taking over from Biden moved us
made
from...
Made it a toss-up.
Yeah, made it, moved it from Trump has a small but consistent lead
right.
to it's a tie race. And right. then depending on exactly how you're looking at the swing states and exactly what the polling is the most recent week and
right.
which pollsters you include and which pollsters you don't, you'll get, you know, whether you give Harris a slight advantage or Trump a slight advantage varies. I think most places have, you know, things have moved very, very slightly towards Trump if you compare now to a month and a half ago. Like in between, it's noisy, blah, 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 but very slightly towards Trump.
Yeah.
So like the way I have it has moved from too close to call with a very slight Harris lead to too close to call with a very slight Trump lead. And that's all about a handful of states. And I'll get into that. Well, let me do that first since we're there.
Right.
If you just take the state averages, like my election graphs averages are based on last five poll averages. And so most of the swing states at this point, that means you're taking approximately the last week of polls. Now they're, you know, and I base it based on the mid date of the dates the polls were in the field, not when the polls actually came out. So a couple of annoying things happen sometimes. Like there was a Franklin and Marshall poll that came out, a big pollster, well trusted in Pennsylvania, blah, blah, blah. But they used like a 2 week time period in how long they were in the field. So the very moment it came out, it was already too old to be included in my current
right.
averages. You know, because like there were other pollsters that were out in the field for only a few days and put their results out quickly, whereas Franklin and Marshall, you know, had a longer period out there and is careful and like double checks their stuff. And, but the result of that is by the time their results were out, they were old.
Right.
but anyway, the bottom line, let me read you the seven states. And this is, well, you know, I was going to read it off the blog post, but let me read this one off the live post. And this, again, is including everything but like a handful of polls that came out in the last 12 hours or so that I have not entered. But none of those new polls were in swing states, I don't think. So here are the seven swing states right now, according to my averages. Michigan, Harris by 0.3%. Wisconsin rounds to Trump by 0.0. It's actually like Trump by 0.02 or something. You know,
fucking
Georgia.
I hate this fucking election.
Georgia, Trump by 0.6%. Nevada, Trump by 0.7%. Pennsylvania, Trump by 1.2%. Arizona, Trump by 1.2%. North Carolina, 1.3%. Now, the key to all of that is that those are so
tough. I mean, it's a toss up. I mean, nobody has a clear lead. I mean, all of those, you know, the New York Times did this thing where they had this chart that I shared. It showed.
Yeah, they've had this chart out for the last few months. It's a good chart.
Well, last few months, it's a good chart that goes and shows each state that's close and what the biggest recent polling miss was, okay, for right. example. And it shows the range of what it is. So you go, say Michigan, for example, okay, it shows that the polling miss, the biggest one, was in 2022, and it was a 6-point polling miss, okay? And so, and this was recent, okay? So it's not like, you know, this is not... You know, not from like 10 years ago or something, but they missed by 6 points. Okay.
Right.
So right now, when you're looking at that number and how tight it is, it's basically flip a coin in the fucking air because it's too much. Wisconsin, 2020, a 9-point miss. Mm-hmm. Again, not, you know, not Asian history. This is the last election cycles, okay? Nevada, this one is an old miss. It was 4 points. It was in 2012. So that they're not showing that one. But for example, Pennsylvania, again, 2022, a 5-point miss. Again.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these are so important. And Arizona had a 3-point miss in 2022. And if you remember, Arizona, 2020, Trump was supposedly, that was like, people were had been picking Trump to win, and Biden won Arizona, which is what enraged Trump when it was called that Biden won Arizona early on Fox, because that had been, you know, they had thought that they had Arizona in the bag. So when you add up all those fucking states and how close they are on those averages, what the fuck recently happened? Basically, it's like...
Yes. So, and look, here's the thing. Like, with that range, yeah, if you take, well, throw Iowa and Maine CD2 into the mix too, the range at the moment, if you take all of those states and say they could go either way, because right now I have Iowa at Trump up 4.4%, that still has been lightly polled. There have only been two polls this cycle, but they showed it closer than you would have thought, so I'm keeping it in there. And then Maine CD2, Trump by 4.4. If you take all of those and say they could go either way, then you go from Trump winning by 86 all the way to Harris winning by 114, being well within the range of, okay, that could happen.
Those could happen. Yeah, I mean,
anywhere within that range, you should not be surprised. Like, no, you know, it's like, okay, so like, and so
I hate this election, Sam. I fucking hate this election. I have never hated an election with such passion. This has been a crescendo of 2016, 2020, and now we get this whole fucking thing again with even more razor thin numbers and shit and whatever. I hate it, Sam. I fucking hate it.
Right. And one thing, since you said razor thin numbers, I want to point out again, razor thin numbers in these polling does not necessarily mean the actual result will be razor thin. It might well be that, like, this whole election hinges on multiple states that are within the realm of recounts and it gets really fucking messy. But it could easily be like the ranges of that extreme.
It could be a blowout for all we fucking know.
It could be a blowout by either side. Like, that is very possible. Like, there's so many states that are like within the, because again, it's not that, oh my God, this state really is 0.03% or whatever the hell it is. That's the polling average. But it could be anywhere from one side winning by 5% to the other side winning by 5%.
Right.
You know, we just don't know. Polling's not good enough to tell us the difference there. So anyway, the bottom line is the overall, there has not been a huge movement in that situation in a few months. So one thing I did look at, though, because like lots of people were talking about how, oh my God, the conservative pollsters are flooding the zone with crap polls to make it look like Trump is doing better than he really is. So I did some looking at that. And so I'll go through what I found using my averages, but also like, yeah, and look, there's some people who do it by specifically saying, okay, this pollster is a known conservative that has been known to put their thumb on the scales, and you know, like Rasmussen or Trafalgar or like a half dozen others. I'm like, you know, I'm not comfortable sort of making a case by case decision of like, okay, these guys are obviously trying to manipulate things. Let's throw them out.
Sure,
but you know, Handy Dandy 538 runs a set of pollster ratings. Their ratings are not based on sort of, are they partisan or not, but
they're based on accuracy.
Their quotation is the historical track record and the methodological transparency.
Okay. Right.
So basically like it's not just that how accurate they've been, but also how open are they about how do they get the results they do? So even if someone was like, had gotten the exact election results every single time, if they're a black box and don't tell you anything, they would lower their rating. Okay, so using these ratings, I figured I could like filter out my averages, like use my same technique for figuring out the averages, you know, last five polls, blah, 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 weight it when they produce multiple results, all that kind of crap,
sure,
but filter it based on those ratings. So the first thing I did, and this was like a week and a half ago, when somebody asked a question on Mastodon.
Maxodon? I like that name, though. Maxodon.
Maxodon.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
We should build something with that. Yeah, I like it.
Anyway, I used Pennsylvania as an example and used different cutoffs. Like 538 scale is on a 0 to 3 scale, basically. Okay. So three is the best, and 0 is you are utter crap. And they actually have, like, there are also pollsters that don't get a rating at all. And there can be two reasons for that. One is they've been expelled from the 538 averages because they just suck so badly. Okay. And the other reason something could have no ratings is no track record. Like, it's a new
poll. It's a brand new poll. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So with that, using Pennsylvania as an example, at that time, Pennsylvania with my average that I just philosophically include fucking everything. I don't care. I include everything. Let the averages wash it out. I had Harris up by 0.1%. If I restricted that to only pollsters rated 1.5 and above, it moved to Harris up by 0.4%. If I further restricted it to only pollsters 2.0 and above, it went up to Harris up by 0.8%. And if I restricted it to the very highest tier, pollsters only 2.5 and above, Harris up by 1.5%. So
still within the margin of error.
Right. Well, the thing is, with the averages, there isn't really a margin of error anymore. The margin of error applies to a single poll, but yes.
Well,
it is within the realm of the variation of averages like this.
Exactly.
That, like, right. Like, averages like this differ by more than 1.5% day over day as polls come in and out of the average, as, you know, a new poll comes in and there's an outlier that does this, whatever. Like, polls move by a couple percent up and down. They vary within a range.
I guess a margin of error isn't the right term for that. It's really within the range of when I was talking earlier about the range of polling errors that you've had before with the average is all combined. It is within that range of that historic.
And here's the thing. I did something better than just looking at one state like this. In a second, I'll talk about that. But just using that as an example, that is saying that using high quality pollsters only made Harris look 1.4% better. And as you were mentioning, like,
that's a big move in terms of average.
Well, what I was going to say is, as you were saying, 1.4 is small, it's within the margin of error, blah, blah, blah. But when you have seven fucking states that are less than 2%, 1.4 is huge.
Yes.
And so the example at the time that I did that initial analysis, it moves the election from Trump winning by 56 electoral votes to Harris winning by 100. If you just moved everything by 1.4% towards Harris.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Now, what I did, though, like, that was just one state. That was like a week and a half ago. I redid the analysis, but I did that same exercise for all seven swing states. Because, frankly, the other states, unless we are in one of those blowout situations, the other states are not going to matter. And so here's what we got from there. Like, the range, It differed by state, and I'm sure this would, if I repeated the analysis like several times, I'd get different, like over the course of a week or something, I'd get different results because it depends on which pollsters were in the field at the moment, blah, 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 which ones I had included in my average, which ones I hadn't. But it ranged from helping Harris by 1.6% to helping Trump by 1.5%. So, like, if you averaged out those seven states on average, they helped Harris, but only by 0.2%. Okay. But, you know, if you look instead at how it would change the tipping point, it ends up moving the tipping point by 0.7%. And in the case of when I did this blog post, that moved the tipping point from Trump by 0.6% to Harris by 0.01%. So it moves it from a small Trump advantage to a very small Harris advantage. But either way, We are
they're still not comfortable. Exactly. It's not comfortable for anybody.
We're still in the too close to call situation, no matter what you do with these. So like the people who are saying that the junk polls are making it look a little bit better. Well, a lot of people are saying ignore the polls, ignore the averages. The junk conservative polls are making it look much better for Trump than it would otherwise. From what I can tell, the junk polls are making it look slightly better for Trump than if you left them out. But either way,
it's not overwhelming. Yeah.
It's not overwhelming. It's a relatively small change, but it's a small change within the realm of too close to call. So it's all too close to call no matter what. It may shift you from saying too close to call with one side having a slight edge to too close to call with the other side having a slight edge. But either way, it's too close to call. You know, my numbers actually, and going back to at the moment rather than at the blog post I had, you know, I have my two models that allow for time left. And the more pessimistic of them for Harris gives Harris a 17.8% chance of winning. The more optimistic one gives her a 28.5% chance of winning. I'm a little bit more pessimistic than if you look at 538, The Economist, The Hill, which is DDHQ. All of those are much, much closer to 50-50. And the reason is very specific. Like they all make a going in assumption that the direction of the polling error could be either way. Like, and they're right. Not even going to make any assumptions about like equal chances of the polling error going towards Harris or the polling error going towards Trump. Mine looks at the last four elections and says over the course of the last four elections, on average, the polls have underestimated the Republican. So it sort of says the lower chance for the Democrat is based on saying, okay, you need the polls to be underestimating the Democrat, and that has happened less often than underestimating the Republican over the last four elections. That's why. Now, having said that, there are a couple things to note. One is that, what was I going to say? Oh, first of all, even if I'm confusing myself. I did want to make one point. If you compare, like I've got this other thing that if the election was now, okay, if you go back 2 or 3 months, these were very different from each other because they allowed for, okay, the polling averages can change in the time remaining. The events can happen that change people's opinion. At this point, those two are very close to each other. Like they only differ by like a handful of percent in the odds. And that's basically indicating we got like only 10 days left. Okay. Let me finish my presentation. And then you can talk. No, what's left, all of these odds at this point are basically no longer saying things will change. Is there some chance things will change in the last week and a half? Sure. But for the most part, the odds are now entirely based on what you think might happen to the polling errors. And so that's why mine is more biased, because in the past few elections, again, the Republicans have been underestimated more often than the Democrats, and my odds reflect that. Now, getting beyond that, like moving beyond the polls and time to sort of shift to other things, here's why I think my own numbers are probably more pessimistic for Harris than we could say, than like my gut. And I've said before, if you waterboarded me, my gut says the polls are underestimating Harris. Okay.
We'll hold off on waterboarding you for now.
And here's the thing. Like I have a gut feeling, and Nate Silver put out a post as well, like this week, saying basically he said my gut is Trump is slightly favored here, but don't trust my gut because nobody fucking knows anything, you know, and so yeah, look, I mentioned last week when Yvonne wasn't here, the enthusiasm gap. That's one thing. And I still see that, even though, and I'm sure we'll get into this more, the Democrats are wetting their pants right now. I'm a little bit nervous myself, but, you know, but there's still an enthusiasm gap. You're seeing like the Trump folks just don't seem to have the same level of excitement as they did the last couple times around. And that's one big thing. But another that I'll put out there that, you know, Yvonne had put on our list of potential topics a while back, something we haven't talked about yet, which is underestimating female anger.
Mm.
And I think this is something where, like, all polling models, and I'm not talking about the kind of aggregating models that I do to come up with my odds and that 538 and all those are to do. I'm talking about when you are conducting a poll, you have to have a model of turnout that transforms your raw polls into what you are actually describing. Because like nobody, absolutely no pollsters at this point call people until they get 1,000 people to respond and then just divide. Okay. Because the problem is if you do that, either, you know, either the old fashioned by phone stuff or text or web or whatever, you end up with a group that is not representative of the overall population because you're looking at the subset of people who are likely to be engaged with polls, you know, and that's automatically like, you're going to get a different like breakdown than you would expect in the overall voting population. So every single pollster has some form of, they ask those people demographic information about themselves, race, gender, education, a bunch of other factors. And then they reweight their results right, to try to match what they expect the turnout to look like. But they're guessing at the turnout model. And they base some of that on like, what if it looks like last time, you know? And I think if you've got an issue, you know, and I heard one person talking the other day, and I'm not going to be able to give a cite, but talking about why exactly did pollsters underestimate Republicans in 2016 and 2020. And in 2016, it was basically that Trump's campaign spoke to a group of voters who traditionally didn't vote. Like there were a whole bunch of disaffected, less educated white folks who turned out in 2016 that had not historically turned out in other elections. And so all of the pollsters were wrong in their demographic models of who would turn out in 2016 because they underestimated that group. 2020 was slightly different. It was the Trump campaign specifically was going after a base strategy where they were trying to get out the vote in very red counties and get more more of their sort of base to just come out and vote in places that typically were not competitive areas, but they just wanted to get the very red places to come out and vote and do their thing. And so that's why they underestimated those folks. My gut, and again, this is my gut. I would never put this directly on election graphs, but I'll mention it on the Curmudgeon's Corner, is that this time, the models that pollsters are using are underrepresenting women. I think you're going to get a big turnout boost in women and some of the early vote numbers. Like, our early vote is really, really fucking hard to interpret because, like, you know, so for instance, there are lots of early vote numbers that are coming out in terms of how many Republicans have returned their ballots versus Democrats in states where right, there is a partisan registration. And, but the thing is with that, you're sort of gambling of, okay, but what's the messaging this year in terms of how people are going to vote? Because on the one hand, it looks like last time around in 2020, Democrats were heavily skewed towards early vote and mail-in, and all the Republicans were doing day of because Donald Trump was going out there saying, don't trust anything but day of, go day of.
Right.
And so that was massively skewed. And so when you see numbers that say, you know, hey, Democrats are returning a lot of return of early vote, you're like, oh, well, that's good for Democrats, right? But it's unclear because this time there are a lot of reports that Democrats are deciding that they want to vote in person and they don't want to do the early vote as much. Whereas this time around, the Republicans are doing all kinds of pushes nationwide to get their folks to early vote. So that's more muddled. However, there also are some early vote stats on male versus female, and it looks like women are participating in early vote at like 55 to 45 at the moment. And unlike the, you know, Republican versus Democrat, where like the partisan messaging of like, should you early vote, should you vote day of, whatever, muddles things up, there shouldn't be a gap there for male versus female. Like, and so I feel, and again, gut feel could be completely wrong, but my gut feel is that the models of turnout are underestimating the angry women about the overturn of Roe v. Wade, and that will be one factor that makes me makes me think that there's a good chance we're underestimating Harris this time around. But again, who the fuck knows? You know,
here's one thing that I want to point out, and I made a note that you're talking about the errors and how in 2020 it undercounted the Republicans in terms of absolute votes, especially the margin of victory in like Pennsylvania and a few states that looked like they were more that looked more Democratic according to the polls than the actual final results were. But here's a flip side to that. It they misjudged the margin of victory, but not the victory itself. The one thing is that happened at that election that was interesting. From my perspective, was those margins didn't change the result because it's based on winner take all electoral vote. But what did happen was that all of a sudden we thought both Georgia and Arizona were not going to be were going to be Republican, and both wound up Democratic. And so the one thing about this is that yes, the 2020 election did underestimate the margins of victory. They were closer in some states that wound, but the changes did not impact the final result in terms of those states. What it did was it made it narrower. But in other cases, what wound up doing is in states that were wound up being probably, you know that made a big difference in what the final result was, it moved a couple of states that people had as Republican and wound up moving them Democrat. So I thought that was one of the more interesting results of that election. And of course, the question is, when we talk about this, is how have people compensated for that, number one?
Yeah. Okay. Well, and this is the other thing. I feel like pollsters have said we got it wrong 2 years in a row. How do we fix that? Right. And they've probably overcompensated.
And the other part is
how much of all this argument that we just made over the last couple of minutes is us trying to make ourselves feel better?
I don't feel any better by making any of these arguments. I gotta be honest with you. It goes back to what you were saying yesterday on the Slack, and Sam is like, well, you know, this, that, I mean, we're so down or whatever. And I don't think it has anything to do with rising anxiety.
What I said specifically, like, was that compared to a month and a half, 2 months ago, I was specifically talking about, there was this point in time shortly after, right around when Harris picked Walz, right around when the VP choice was, there was this sort of what was described as the joyous campaign, right? We had like, it looked exciting and positive and whatever, and Walz was doing their weird thing, and like that seemed to be hitting. And I'm not talking about on polls. I'm just talking about like vibes, essentially. That method of argument seemed to be getting traction that, you know, hey, Trump is dangerous, Trump is scary, had not gotten. And then it seems like more recently that sort of their weird stuff seems to be a thing of the past. And we're back to sort of Trump is scary. And at the same time, like I said, the Democrats are wetting the bed.
But I think it's also more than that.
Yeah.
For all what that these motherfucking right wingers are complaining and bitching and moaning about, right?
Yeah.
You know what? No, Harris isn't out there saying that she is going to jail her opponents. She isn't going out there and saying that she's going to take any of the Republicans' rights. None of this shit. Whatever straw man they have made up. The reality is that for the Democrats, I mean, this guy has literally said that he wants to turn the U.S. military against his own people.
Right.
Flat out. I mean, you know, you've got women suffering from the healthcare decision, from the healthcare positions that the Republican Party has pushed forward. And, you know, the only hopes to make perhaps a change in the future is not to reelect Republicans like right now. And if you do that, you're entrenching that further. Okay. All of these things. I mean, listen, the attacks on the transgender community, Sam. Fuck, man. If you're a transgender person and you're not petrified,
right,
of a fucking Republican administration, you're Caitlyn Jenner, basically. That's the only fucking person, because it's like the same thing as the Peter Thiels and the Caitlyn Jenners. They're rich enough that they think, you know, I'll get my taxes. None of that shit's going to affect me.
Right.
Those are the people that you know, they oh, it's not happening to me. You know, fuck them. Fuck those poor people. You know? And I gotta be honest. You know, we are in a world right now that even fucking Bill Gates is sick of fucking billionaires.
Yes.
Seriously. He basically just flat out said, fuck it. Take most of my money away. This is not worth it. Not with all these other clowns. Fuck this. You know what? I'd rather just give up all my fucking money and take their fucking money, because they're just fucking everything up.
Right.
I mean, that's the fucking world we're in, where Bill Gates basically said, shit, tax me, take it all away. Out loud!
Right. Okay, so we're moving on at this point from the polls and the horse race to all the other campaign-related stuff. So let's take a quick break, and we'll go through some of the other things that are affecting this last 10 days of this race. Back after this.
Do, do, do! This podcast is sponsored by AlexMzilla.com. Alex Mzilla is great. It's on YouTube, and it has lots of fun videos.
Alex Mzilla is awesome and great.
I love his videos, and they are obviously better than Curmudgeon's Corner.
Well, they're funnier. They're more interesting.
And frankly, he seems at least a little smarter than either of the hosts of Curmudgeon's Corner.
Honestly, it's ridiculous how endlessly talented and phenomenal Alex Mzilla is.
That's how great his YouTube channel is.
AlexMzilla.com.
Yes. Do, do, do.
Okay, we are back. And real quick, just during the break, I thought of something responding to what you were talking about, in how in 2020, the polls in Pennsylvania underestimated Trump, but the polls in Arizona and Georgia underestimated Biden, for instance. This is exactly why I have two models, one that's independent states and one that's uniform swing. It's because basically, while when we're talking about the polling error underestimated Trump in 2020, we're talking on average. It's actually different state by state. And the difference between my two models is the independent states assumes that there's completely no relation whatsoever to the errors in every state.
Right.
Whereas the uniform swing one assumes that the errors are the same in every state.
Right, right, right.
And obviously neither one of those things is actually true. They are correlated. Like if the same pollsters are doing the same thing in a whole bunch of states, they're likely going to make the same kind of error. But you get this kind of effect where, like, not every state is going to be the exact same way. So that's exactly why I have those two. Now, at some point, I'd like to, like, merge them, and maybe for 2028, I'll figure that out. Anyway, let's hit some of the other stuff. So this week, we had, like, John Kelly, who was Trump's chief of staff and was, you know, had a whole bunch of other things that he did before that. But basically, he came out on the record. We'd heard some of these things off the record before, but he came out on the record, on audio. Like, there were recordings of him talking about, you know, basically how Trump wants to be a dictator, how he loved Hitler. He wants his generals to be more like Hitler's generals, how, like, you know, he had agreed to pay for this one funeral of a military person who had been not killed in combat, but killed on their own base by, you know, people beating her up, apparently. Yeah. But, like, then he found out how much a funeral would cost and was like, you know, it doesn't cost $60,000 to bury
a fucking Mexican. Yeah. Well, to be fair, okay, in his assessment of burying anybody, I mean, he did bury his ex-wife in his side his fucking golf course.
Yes, he did. But look, because we all know he's a cheap bastard. Like,
oh, my God.
But here's the thing. Like, this is another one of those things where in any previous universe prior to the last 10 years, this kind of thing would be the end immediately for a candidate.
Immediately. But the candidate would be, it's over. It's over.
But that is not true of Donald Trump. Like, all this
stuff.
It's
so ridiculous.
You know, this is all sort of baked in, as they say. And, you know, I've seen people saying, you know, we shouldn't quote the whole normalized thing. We shouldn't normalize it. We shouldn't whatever. But it's like, at this point.
Listen, if people are saying about normalizing it, it is blasted, you know, headlines. You know,
yeah.
And the kind of blasted headlines in the past brought down a candidate immediately. And right now, the MAGA folks are like, eh, so what?
Whatever. Yeah.
Whatever.
That's fine. Well, and part of this, and I've said this before, but it's worth saying again and again and again. There's this, the Democrats going back all the way to 2015, when Trump first came down the escalator. And hell, at first, the mainstream Republicans were doing this too, before they all got crushed. Kept sort of feeling like all we have to do is expose how shitty a person Trump is better. We need to show the bad things he's done. We show that he's an asshole, show that he's all the bad things we know. And then at some point, all his supporters will abandon him. And look, long ago, it became absolutely clear that was never going to happen. And the reason is the Trump supporters are not Trump supporters because they don't know this stuff. They're not even Trump supporters despite this stuff. They're Trump supporters because of this stuff. They like it. They want it. So being like, oh, did you know Trump loves Hitler? That's not like, oh, crap, well, I can't support him now. That's like, good, so do I.
Look, last week I did.
Not me, to be clear.
You're acting in third person. Yes, let's be clear. Sam does not like Hitler. Let's clarify that for anybody who got confused and maybe all of a sudden we wound up getting a clip of Sam out there how he loves Hitler, which that would be just hilarious. But anyway, you know, I was thinking about how I think a large subset of people that like Trump are like the high school clique kind of people, the really like, you know, the guys who people in high school that used to put down everybody, make fun of people, beat up on the weaker people, kind of a thing. The thing, which that's what they did. You had these groups of people who would just get together and just beat up on anybody that wasn't the so-called cool people. And, well, and those people, they don't give a shit about the weak. They don't give a shit about the poor. They don't give a shit about these people. And like you said, when Trump comes out and says all these things, these are things that this is what they like. Yeah, and this last week, you know, I had mentioned that there's a couple of teenage girls over here that made their got themselves a little bit famous because they're really good at driving a boat. Okay. All right. Twins, young, you know, there's a whole bunch of people here that watch boats coming in and out of the inlet, and some of our inlets are very tricky. And man, they were really good, okay, at driving a boat. And then, you know, so I followed them because it was pretty cool, like watching, you know, they started doing a whole, because so many people in the boating industry know about them and followed them, and they were doing like, you know, boat shows and stuff and whatnot, you know, which is, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, you know, and you know, look, I'm one that drives a boat, and I was just, honestly, I was very impressed with their, with how they drove a boat. I will tell you that better than me, and they were very young, okay? So, and then, this weekend, like a whole bunch of them that seemed like exactly this kind of high school, like cool clique together, got together. And they're all having this party. And a bunch of them are wearing MAGA hats. And they got Trump flags and all these stuff. And these people are like 20. And a whole bunch of them are like, are women. And they're all like, you know, oh yeah, Trump is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh, you know, yeah, it's this whole high school thing, man. It's literally, look, honestly, I've said this before, I'll repeat it. Look, this is like Back to the Future Part 2, man. It's really Biff Tannen fucking becoming president. Literally. The casino, the, you know, controlling the government, sending the everything. It might as, you know, fuck. It's exactly the same.
Because, of course, Biff Tannen was based on Donald Trump in Back to the Future 2. But, yes.
Wait, are you shitting me?
No. His character was based on Donald Trump.
Fuck out of here.
Not in Back to the Future 1, when he was just a kid.
But the character that they made him into when he became famous in Back to the Future 2 was based directly on Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Motherfucking hell! Well, that explains a lot. Shit.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, it's that future. I don't know.
Now I've seen some polling.
But I didn't finish one thing.
Oh yeah, finish.
You know, this group of people, the whole thing is about being the it people. You know? Mm-hmm. We're the ones that go to Mar-a-Lago. I've heard some of these people talk, you know, and we're with the famous people, and we're, you know, and you know, we're hot, you know, and you know, they all like, you know, dress very, you know, provocatively, and you know, and then they visualize Trump as some sexy guy, which he isn't, because he is old and fat and out of shape. Which I don't understand. I mean, I don't understand how they idealize him in that way when the guy is just an out of shape fat fuck. I don't get it. Not that there is anything wrong with it, but the thing is that he puts himself out there like some Adonis. His followers, you know, literally draw him and caricature him as something looking like that when he is not anywhere like that. And honestly, that's one trait that he shares with Hitler. Because think about Hitler, right? Uh-huh. Did Hitler have blonde hair, blue eyes? Was he tall? Blah, 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 blah. No! This whole Aryan race that he talked about, he had none of those. those traits. These fucking people. They drive me nuts.
Yvonne's about to run out of time. So just on the sort of, this is what they like, this is what his supporters like, I have seen some polling and a lot of anecdotal stuff about how lots of Trump supporters just don't believe he's going to do the things he says he's going to do that people on the other side are all like upset about. Like, oh, you know, he's going to use the military this way. He's going to politicize. He's going to go after his political opponents.
I think that there is a significant number of them that do.
That are in denial. Large,
yeah, I think there is a significant number. I'm totally sure of that.
That just don't believe it. Like when they're like, you know, oh, all of these, all of these liberals who
Trump
are crying about
syndrome,
Trump derangement syndrome, the death of democracy, Trump's going to be a dictator, Trump's going to do this, Trump's going to do that. It's all bullshit. And look, I certainly hope the worst case scenarios pointed out by liberals will not come to reality. Even if Donald Trump wins, it will be bad. I hope it's not that bad. But, you know, the fact that people are, I mean, look, we saw what he did when he was president. Right. And I guess the difference is, like, folks like Yvonne and I think that was an absolute horrid 4 years where there were bad things happening practically every week due to his presidency.
Yep.
Including, of course, January 6th at the end. And
whereas it built, Sam. It was building. That's the thing.
Yes.
I think people are missing the point that it was building, because at the beginning, there were a lot of people that were actively trying really hard to stop him from doing the worst things. And as time went along,
yeah, people in the administration being brakes on him.
Yes. And as time went along, he started getting rid of every single person that told him he can't do this.
Right. And so it was getting worse. And, you know, look. And January 6th denial is out there too.
Nobody died on January 6th, Sam.
Yeah, like
except
the people who did. Yes, I saw one TikTok from somebody who outlined he bumped into an old friend at a grocery store or something like that of someone who is a Trump supporter, and you know, and who asked him why he wasn't. Because he had like Harris hat on or something. And he described January 6th. And he's like, oh, the other guy was like, January 6th? What are you talking about? Nothing happened there.
A day of love. A day of love.
It was just a protest, whatever. And, you know, haven't you seen the videos of the police letting him in? It's all hyped. It's all made up. And he's like, haven't you seen the videos?
The videos?
Of them being violent and he's like, he hadn't. So he pulled out his phone and showed him some of those videos and says, by the reaction, it was absolutely obvious that he'd never seen any of that and had no idea that any of that had happened. Now he ends with like, I don't know if I changed his vote or not. Probably not. But like, at the very least, I was showing
lowered
him something.
Lowered his motivation.
He had no idea. He had zero idea, because in the media ecosystem he was in, which was A, doesn't pay attention to news very much, and when he does, it's Fox.
Right.
You know, that was the description of this guy, and that's the description of lots of people.
Lots of people. A lot of people.
Now, I know you got to go, Yvonne. There are a few more bullet points I wanted to hit. I could hit them after you're gone.
Well, can we hit quick before we
okay,
go?
Okay, we can hit quick.
I got a few minutes.
One, there was a report this week that was going through the ecosystem. Like Mark Halperin started this, saying that there's a story being shopped around of something absolutely devastating to Donald Trump. And then further rumors said, let me say this, and then I think I'm where with you are based on Yvonne's making faces. There were further rumors that what this was specifically was there was video of Donald Trump at a recent fundraising event, groping a teenager. Okay.
I will say, listen, in terms of devastating, I don't know. But this is kind of like Comey letter type of stuff. Okay. So I will say this. If you've got a video that you can circulate of this being true, it has that level of impact. Okay.
I honestly, where I am at this point, Like it could have that impact if it was like
it's a small marginal impact, like all of these, because it's like
all of the
Christian conservatives will be like, ah, he's still gonna be my judges.
Right. And look, like you can imagine also a video that's somewhat ambiguous, right? Like maybe there's a video, but like, you know, from the angle, it's like, well, was he really doing that on purpose? What it was, or look, we've had videos of Donald Trump groping his daughter on stage at Republican convention and stuff. You know, like, did that change anything? No. But like, here's the thing. I actually think this is bullshit. I don't think there is any such tape. If there was such a tape, we would have seen it by now. You know,
I don't know.
This is all I will say. Disinformation.
I don't know. Here's the answer. I don't know. I will say that I will say that it's very plausible that such a video exists.
It is plausible. It is absolutely plausible. But
this guy basically said, you know, in the one that, you know, didn't bring him down, one of the first ones that didn't bring him down, how did he say hi to women? Just grab him by the pussy, right?
Yeah.
So what the fuck, you know?
Oh, look, I'm sure he is engaged in this behavior at various times. I would not, it is completely plausible that a video exists. I'm just saying, like, if this video existed, I am surprised. Like, it would be surprising to me that we have not seen it already. Like, that we would get all of these rumors about they're shopping around this story, but no one's taken it.
Maybe somebody's just trying to make money off the fucking thing.
I could see that, too. I could see that, too. Like, you can have this video.
Where's my $2 million? Give me my money.
Yeah. Right. Whereas reputable news organizations, of course, won't pay that.
Won't pay for it. Right. Exactly. So you wind up in this situation. So
somebody would pay that. You know, I don't know.
If I had the money and I could validate it's real, I'll fucking pay for it.
Yeah. And of course, like, maybe validation is part of it, too. Are we sure it's not AI generated? You know, all this kind of stuff. You know, I don't know. But like. Yeah, it falls into the category of the other stuff. Like, I mean, we are 100% in. I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and it wouldn't change a single fucking vote, you know?
And it's true.
I
can't believe how this guy, he was so right about himself in that way.
I mean, there are those marginal folks. The other just bullet
points. Maybe shot Ivanka on stage.
Well, you know, if Ivanka came out and on camera said, yeah, he molested me my entire childhood, maybe that would move
some. That'll move a few points. Seriously.
I know.
Oh, it's only a few points.
Yes. No, and I'm not necessarily, I obviously have no evidence about that. But yeah, whatever.
And I gotta be honest, I think, would anybody be surprised? I wouldn't be surprised, but God, for the love of God, I really wish that didn't happen.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay, all right. To be clear, okay, nobody's wishing that Ivanka was molested by this monster, okay?
Right. Absolutely. Okay, real quick, other things that came out this week, both Elon Musk and Donald Trump apparently talking to Putin on a regular basis over the last couple of years.
Well, now we understand why. Now it finally makes sense why Elon said in that interview, it slipped out that said that if the Democrats won, that he was worried that he was going to jail. And now it all adds up because that son of a bitch had to have that in the back of his head.
And also, apparently, Donald Trump says he's talking to Bibi almost every day.
That's not surprising. I will say that, look, especially from Bibi. Because, like I said before, BB fucking came to Congress to campaign basically against fucking Obama in 2012. He gave a speech against him here. So what the hell is going to make me feel like this has changed in any way, shape, or form that he's going and, like, talking to Trump, who apparently wants to flatten Gaza and, like, develop it into some kind of, like, real estate and just kill all the Palestinians or something like that.
Yeah, the ethnic cleansing plan is almost completely out in the open now.
Yeah.
It's like, anyway. Speaking of that, just to toss up a couple of last bullet points, Israel did do their attack on Iran. It looks like it was relatively limited, military targets only. Hopefully we're done for the moment. We shall see, you know. And also, North Korea is apparently putting troops in Ukraine now.
That's such a sign of strength by Putin that he has to grab North Korean malnourished troops to put in the front line in fucking Ukraine. I mean, you wanna tell me how this is it? And I guess it's just an exchange. You know, what's his name needs energy and stuff and whatever. And so, oh well, here I'll just send some soldiers for you to sacrifice in the front line of Ukraine. Here we go. There.
Yeah. Great. And I don't think either of those two things are going to affect the election. It's too little, too late. Like whatever's baked in there, I think the whole situation in the Middle East probably does not help Harris at all. Like the big drop in Biden's numbers actually came after October 7th of last year. I don't know. Like there seems to still be that continuous drag from very left-leaning people who are like, I can't vote for Harris because she supports genocide, that are just withholding their vote entirely, which, you know.
To support a guy who has basically made it his banner campaign to go and ethnically cleanse the whole damn place. Yes, that's very helpful. Yeah.
Yes. Well, they're withholding their vote or voting for Stein or whatever. And, you know, I sympathize. Like, the situation is horrible. Like I've said on this show, we should be withholding military support from Israel at this point. But you still have two people to choose from, and one is worse.
I'm sorry.
Like this whole like I don't want to pick the lesser of two evils. I'm sorry if that's your choice. You pick. If somebody offers you, I'm sorry, you have to vote for either Hitler or Stalin. Who do you want to be in charge? You still have to pick.
Jesus Christ.
You still have to pick. Like, you pick which one you think will be least damaging, even if they both are horrible. I'm sorry.
Much equally bad. I got to be honest. Can I be honest? I mean, I would say that I would say more a choice between Hitler and Mussolini. And probably Mussolini was less worse, you know, than Hitler, because if I recall correctly, and I may be corrected the next time, but a lot of the stuff with regards to, you know, minorities and stuff and whatever, Mussolini just went along because Hitler was basically egging him on about it, not exactly because he was all like jumping up and down.
So headline out of this show, Yvonne is a Mussolini apologist.
No!
You support Mussolini. You think Mussolini was great?
No, all I'm saying is if my only choices were Mussolini and Hitler, I guess I'm taking fucking Mussolini.
Anyway, yeah. So we'll see. Anyway,
right. I gotta go.
Yvonne has to go. The usual, go to the curmudgeons-corner.com. Go there for our transcripts, our archives, all the ways to contact us, blah, 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 including our Patreon, where you can give us money at various levels. We will mention you on the show. We will send you a postcard. We will send you a mug, all of that sort of thing. All very fun stuff at $2 a month or more. Or if you just ask, we will invite you to our Patreon. No, that's wrong. Invite you to our Slack, where Yvonne and I and a bunch of listeners are chatting, sharing links, doing all that kind of stuff all week long. We would love to have more of you. Yvonne, do you have a highlight or do you just need to run?
No, I need to run. Okay. No highlight this week. Sorry.
No highlight this week. You need to join, and then you don't need the highlights because you will have already seen them. Right. And so for once, this actually is a short show. Amazing. But I hope you guys appreciate it. And right. we will come back next week with a regular show. And I think more details next week if it's true, but I think we're once again going to live stream election night as the results come in.
Yes.
So we'll give you more details next week. And that's it. Hey, everybody, have a great week and stay safe. We'll see you next time. Goodbye. Say goodbye, Yvonne.
Bye.